all right, I'm not going to hang out on the stage. I'm going to talk to you guys about your future. So after hearing what Ronnie had to say, how do you feel about the future of the beef business? Looking pretty dismal, isn't it? Question for you. To me, the future of the beef business, the future of agriculture, the future of farming, and the future of ranching has everything to do with leadership. When you look across what's happened in the last decade, when you look at the issues that we are facing on the farm and the ranch, who do you think is influencing the conversation around food and ranching today? Consumers? Who else? And by the way, this is interactive, so you guys actually get to talk instead of just sit there and listen. So seriously, who do you think is influencing the conversation? Environmentalists, what I hear over here? Millennials, good. Who else? Crazy people. How old are you, young man? You make 10. I have an 11-year-old at home. I love your spirit. You make sure you stay with beef cattle, okay? All right, who else is influencing the conversation? Government? Media? What'd you say? Vegetarians, and y'all love vegetarians and people eating tasty animals, don't you? All right, when you look at the reality, and I only have 30 minutes, so we're not going to spend a lot of time on this. When you look at the reality of what we have faced across all of agriculture in the last 10, 15, 20 years, I don't know about all of you, but I never expected to see this crap in my lifetime. The reality is that we've had to face all sorts of misinformation, we've had to face all sorts of activist pressure, and we've had to face all sorts of BS. Would you agree? And what do we respond with every single time? Science, you don't have to whisper. It's not a secret. Hi, by the way. Science and data. And how does that work for us? Yeah, let's be blatantly clear here. It sucks. We will fail at this conversation every time we come back with science and data, because the reality is when you look across all of the images that we're going across that screen, is they have one thing in common. What was that one thing that you saw? Fear and what else? Ignorance. Now, isn't that interesting? Because if they had beautiful ranches of cattle up there, they would be incredible and they wouldn't be ignorant, right? But when you look at those images, seriously, what's the one thing that they all have in common? Emotions. Yes, sir, you are absolutely right. So, gentlemen, I'm going to make you incredibly uncomfortable. We're going to talk about feelings and emotions. And if y'all don't participate, we're going to sing Kumbaya and have a group hug at the end. All right. In reality, here's what I challenge you with. You look at the future of your business, it is as much about connecting with consumer emotions, whether you agree with those emotions or whether you don't. Case in point, I want you to check out this video from Portlandia. Just pretend they're eating beef, okay? Don't get hung up on the fact that it's chicken.
Hey, guys.
Hello. Hi, hello.
My name is Dana. I'll be taking care of you today. If you have any questions about the menu, please let me know.
I guess I do have a question about the chicken, if you could just tell us a little bit more about it.
The chicken is a heritage breed, woodland-raised chicken that's been fed a diet of sheep's milk, soy, and hazelnuts.
Okay, this is local?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. I'm going to ask you just one more time, and it's local?
It is.
Is that USDA organic or Oregon organic or Portland organic?
It's just all across the board, organic.
The hazelnuts, these are local?
How big is the area where the chickens are able to roam free?
I'm sorry to interrupt. I had exactly the same question.
4 acres. Mm-hmm. Give me just a second. I'll be right back, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
Great. Which is nice.
We're doing the right thing.
I'm too apologetic.
You are.
I drove way too slow here today, didn't I?
Yeah.
I am so weird with that gas pedal. That thing just moves the whole vehicle forward now.
All right, so here is the chicken you'll be enjoying tonight.
You have this information. This is fantastic.
Absolutely. His name was Colin. Here are his papers, okay?
That's great. He looks like a happy little guy who runs around. A lot of friends, other chickens as friends. Putting his little wing around another one and kind of like, you know, palling around.
I don't know that I can speak to that level of intimate knowledge about him. They do a lot to make sure that their chickens are very happy.
When you say they, I mean, who are these people raising Colin?
It's a farm that's located about 30 miles south of Portland.
And you have a good relationship with this farm?
We do.
But is that some guy on a yacht who lives in Miami?
Oh, goodness, no.
Saying that he's organic?
It tears at the core of my being the idea of someone just cashing in on a trend like organic.
No, I know the type, no.
Yeah.
Tell you what, we're going to go check it out if you don't mind. Just if you could hold our seats.
Oh, No.
Yeah, we'll be right back. We'll just want to make sure.
Just, you know, okay. Thank you so much, Dana.
Sure.
Don't you like to know that your chicken was named Colin before you eat him? Is this your reality? I see some heads nodding, some shaking. Here's a great challenge for you. Thanksgiving, when you have your extended family together, why don't you ask them about where their food comes from and how they feel about eating animals? Get back with me what you find out, because you may be surprised and you may not like the answers. But what did you hear in the video? What were they concerned about? Yell it out. Animal welfare. Space issues. Being local. Organic. So let me ask you this. How many of you believe that these people are stupid? Trans up. I always have to check the polite list level of crowd. How many of you believe perhaps they're just misinformed? Oh, so we're a very polite crowd. Okay. So let me ask you this. Do they need to be educated? Put your hand in the air if you think they need to be educated. What do they need to be educated about? Everything, how ranchers are right and they're wrong, right? All right, so let me ask you this. I walk onto your ranch and I say, hello, sir, my name's Michelle Payne Canoper. I'd like to educate you on how you're taking care of your cattle wrong. How would that go over? Oh, I see thumbs down. I see a few people. Let's be honest, you'd throw me off your farm or ranch, wouldn't you? Absolutely. But yet, we and all of agriculture think that we can stand in front of consumers, people who are making choices what to feed their family and trying to take care of their families, and we can say, stupid consumer, let me educate you. I am a rancher. I know all. How's it come off? Arrogant. Defensive. Rude. Is that who we are? Just to be clear, folks, I am one of you. I absolutely love farmers and ranchers. I will stand up for you day in and day out. But the reality is we can't say, stupid consumer, let me educate you about where your food comes from. I know all. 1.5% of the population does not bode well with 98.5% of the population, especially when we are consistently defensive and overreactive when things like the World Health Organization report came out. When things like pink slime hit, which, by the way, we had 8 years to get figured out, and we didn't do it. Defensiveness will never win. Arrogance in today's society of let me educate you, I know all, will never, ever set you up for a future where you get to farm and ranch the way you best see fit. Are any of you tired of paperwork and regulations and the ever-present, ever-looming presence of the government? You get sick of that? You get sick of the questions of the practices that you're using every day? Might I suggest that we approach this as a conversation? And when you look at the future of your business, to consider the fact that these are not issues that you can wait to deal with until you have time, until you decide that it's worth your cause. So let me try a couple things here. Would this describe anybody in the room? Independent, modest, and stubborn as all get out. And you'd much rather be dealing with your land and your animals than you would dealing with all this public relation stuff, right? Fair enough? Well, here is the reality. We don't get to have that privilege anymore, because when you consider what has been happening, you've been given numerous examples today. When you look at it from the social media conversations and you look what's been happening since January of 2009, I've been doing this research. The Humane Society, as of about 8 months ago, had a 550-fold increase in their Twitter following. How many of you are on Twitter? And how many of you know how to use Twitter? Yeah, that's a slightly different number. There has only been one reason that I've ever been in social media, and that has been to incite and inform and inspire conversations around farm and food. I would strongly suggest, when you look at the conversations that are happening out there about the misinformation, about the proliferation, that you consider the fact that Wayne Pacelli, the CEO of the Humane Society of the United States, is out there talking about you on a daily basis, about every farmer and rancher and what we're doing wrong. And I don't know about all of you, but when I stand there and I'm giving my cow that's about ready to drop dead an IV and I've got manure up to my knees and blood dripping down my elbow, I don't think Wayne Pacelli has any right whatsoever to be talking about how I'm caring for my animals. Do you? If your concern about organizations like the Humane Society and people eating tasty animals, and you consider what, for example, PETA has done on Facebook, I would strongly suggest that you consider the opportunity tomorrow when you go home, how you can share some message about why you do what you do. It's not about bottom line, folks. It's about emotions. And when you look at all of these different channels up here and you consider the fact that PETA has 80,000 followers on Instagram and the influence that that has on millennials and teenagers and the likely influence that has on beef consumption and any meat consumption, there's some huge opportunities there. So as you consider some of the conversations and some of the tools, I would hope that you would go home and look at some of those. When you look at the issues that we have at hand, there is no shortage of those. Animal welfare, reference point. What is the majority of the population's reference point when it comes to animal welfare? Very easy question. It's their cats and dogs. And if Fido gets to sleep on the sofa, shouldn't you be putting your cattle on the sofa at night? We have to realize that's people's reference point. And if we're not out there sharing images and talking about why we do what we do, you put an animal in a squeeze chute, it looks awful. Well, we all know that it's safer for the animal. We all know it's safer for the person working with them. But if you're not sharing a picture on Instagram or if you're not talking with people in church, how are they supposed to know those practices? Biotechnology, is that an issue that impacts the beef business? Raise your hand if you think that GMOs and biotechnology impacts the beef business. Why? It's what we're feeding them. And furthermore, do you really think that people that do not support biotechnology and do not support GMOs support antibiotic and hormones? Biotechnology is one of the most contentious issues there are out there. Antibiotics has obviously risen to the forefront. Are you all prepared to be able to talk about why you give your animal antibiotics in a way that is meaningful to the 98.5% of the population? Now, I'm a dairy person, Holstein through and through, which I know none of you are going to like that because I know nobody likes feeding Holstein steers, right? But here's the reality. When I talk about antibiotics, I try to do it from a personal level. Men, I'm going to make you uncomfortable. I apologize again. However, women, how many of you have ever had mastitis? It's not particularly comfortable, and it's not particularly enjoyable. And you know, when my cow has a swollen udder and a temperature, and that's a disease that could kill her, that's an infection that's raging through her body, yes, I do give her antibiotics. And I have never had a conversation with a consumer in that term relating it to how women have to go through similar things that they cannot understand that antibiotics do, in fact, have a reason to be used. So I would suggest that you prepare yourself to talk about why, yeah, we do use antibiotics and why they are okay. Organics, show of hands, how many of you in here raise organic cattle? I promise you won't be shot. It's okay, put your hands up. And on the flip side, how many of you have thrown organic ranchers and producers under the bus? Come on, put your hands up, folks. Here's the reality, and we don't have enough time to get into this, but united we stand, divided we fall. United we stand, divided we fall. And if you think that throwing an organic producer under the bus does you any favors and breeds any trust in the consumer's mind, I might have a little bit of a bone to pick with you. All right, so you go down through all of these issues. You heard them talked about in the videos. You've already been given examples of them. There's price, there's farmside, there's local food, there's hormones. How many of you are prepared to have a conversation about hormones with people? All right, so one of the groups that I work regularly with are dietitians. I was speaking to a group of dietitians in Michigan, which is a science-based degree, master's level degree, if you're not aware, in most states. And I asked them what foods did not have hormones in them. Want to know what their answer was? Plants. We laugh, but science or literacy is a huge issue in this country, is it not? So we can't assume that people understand that hormones are a natural part of the cattle that we're raising. They're a natural part of the crops we're raising. We can't assume that. We have to have that conversation with people in a way that, yeah, hormones do exist in your food. They always have. They're the chemical messengers of life. It's okay. Because people have been led to believe that hormones are wrong. All right, castration and dehorning. I'm going to make some of you very uncomfortable, and I apologize, but I hope that you will be thinking about this a couple weeks from now. Gentlemen, how many of you would be comfortable with having your testicles removed without any pain mitigation? That's what I kind of thought. And the Humane Society, Farm Sanctuary, and people for our PETA continue to blast that message out there. And you need to understand that there are many people in this world that do not distinguish animal lives from human lives. They equate them as the same. So we giggle, cross our legs, and get a little uncomfortable. But when you think about castration, and you think about dehorning, and you think about what's being said out there, you need to understand that food retailers and food service providers, like the infamous Chipotle, are finding our practices as a marketing opportunity. To give you an idea of how extreme this has become, I can tell you with absolute certainty that within the boardrooms of major food retailers, quote, poll-free milk, unquote, has been discussed. What's poll-free milk? Cows without horns. Dairy cattle without horns. Now, I realize that you're in the beef business and you may not think that affects you, does it? Sure does, because if a retailer is making a decision about a practice that's common in the dairy business, they're going to make a decision about practices that you all are being able to do as well. And then the last one, when you look here, is anthropomorphism. What's anthropomorphism? It's making an animal human-like. So how many of you have had your children hug a rodent? Mickey Mouse? We all do it. It's easy for us to laugh and point fingers, but we have to understand that there are many human-like characteristics that are placed in animals. If you question that, look at the billions of dollars that are spent in companion animal care, and then Google dog weddings. It's a really scary thingy. And there's dog dating services, which I don't understand, and I don't think I want to. So when you look out at your future, there's a lot coming. There's a tremendous amount of opportunity for the permission that you have to farm a ranch as you best see fit to be removed. Every issue that is up there is going to define your future, and when you look at what's happening, it does come down, again, to feelings. I like to sum this rather famous quote up like this. People will forget the perfect soundbite that you have been given. They will forget exactly how you farm a ranch, but they will never, ever forget the way you make them feel. You may think that it's ignorant to have a conversation in a coffee shop with a buddy that you've known for the last 30 years about why you're out there taking care of cattle. But you know what? If that person in turn passes information on to his granddaughter about Joe the rancher he knows, do you think that's a good feeling about what we do? Because you see, if we can create those good feelings, and if we can have people refer to Mike in Wyoming and Michelle in Michigan, and we can get people to think about farmers and ranchers as real human beings that are just like them, we win every single time because the question mark has been created. So, you have probably noticed that you do not have any notes in your book from me, and that is because Merck has my book, No More Food Fights, available at their booth. I'll be over there afterwards. On the farm side, the book addresses these six steps specifically, okay? And it is exactly how to be able to have a plan, to have these conversations, to be able to take some things home and do these things for yourself, because it's not complicated. It's about knowing who your target audience is, figuring out what their hot button is, being able to leverage that hot button, spending 15 minutes of time proactively, and then working on a local basis in a community, even if that is a global community for you, and then committing to a plan. We are going to go rapid fire through some of these different steps here. I think the first one's very logical. Consider your target audience. The more specific you can be, the better. And everybody's going to do this differently. Some of you may be excellent with school children. Some of you may really enjoy working with politicians. Anybody really love working with politicians? Yeah, okay, well, maybe not. But you do understand the necessity of it. Media, how many of you would rather beat your head against that metal wall back there than talk to media? All right, we have one honest soul back here. Studies have consistently showed from the International Food Information Council that media cannot find sources to talk about food and agriculture. All they have to do is go down the street, talk to the Humane Society of the United States, and yet we don't want to deal with them, right? I don't like the media either, and I can tell you that I have been misquoted, made to look stupid, and all sorts of different things on major media outlets, and I lived through it. But my encouragement here is to look at who you can make an impact with personally and to really target in on some very specific ones. This is the one that I always love to spend some time on. If you've heard me speak before, you know I'm a rabid Michigan State Spartan fan. I happen to believe that Michigan State is the most superior land-grant university. We are the number one land-grant university. University of Nebraska stinks at football, and we have an outstanding basketball program. And by the way, Nebraska folks, that was just a little faux pas we had at the end of the game. We gave you that game, so congratulations, but whatever. All right, so now that I have your attention, I do actually love Michigan State. My barn is green and white, to give you an idea of how much I bleed green, but I am not so arrogant to stand here and insult all of your universities. Why would I be talking football and basketball and Big Ten? Is it a hot button for lots of folks in the room? Sure, it's something that interests you and excites you. Is it related to farming and ranching? Well, yeah, my degree happens to be in Michigan State in animal science, but that's not why I'm telling you the story. It's just to get your attention, and it's an example of being able to understand what the other people are thinking. So you want to know the secret to no more food fights? You want to know the secret to this ending this whole contentious debate around why we raise food the way we do? Put yourself in the shoes of the other person. And it can be the most excruciatingly difficult thing to take off your size 13 boots and to put on size 6 high-heeled shoes. But I can tell you it is the absolute secret to the conversation. Because if you can understand the other person's perspective, if you can understand what excites them, what drives them, what interests them, you have that opportunity to make that emotional connection with them. And if you want a brilliant example of that, take a look at the HSUS blog. They do an incredible job of connecting, just as Michael Pollan does and some of the other examples you've been given. I do want to share an agriculture example with you today about being able to leverage those hot buttons. And do not shoot me. It happens to be a Holstein person from Michigan. But this was a video that was actually shown at the Center for Food Integrity Conference, which is a great resource for research if you've not seen them. About 3 years ago, to a panel of 6 consumers from Chicago. So I'm just going to show you this one video, get your feedback, and then I'll let you know what the consumers said.
My great-grandpa came from Switzerland all the way to Alto, Michigan, and he started working for the dairy farm down the road. And after only 11 years, he ended up marrying the farmer's daughter. Together, they bought the 90 acres that our farm sits on now. In 1915, Swiss Lane Dairy Farms was established. My grandpa, Joe, took over the farm from there, and now my dad and my 2 uncles own the farm. Now my husband and I and a couple other members of the 4th generation are starting to take a more active role. My husband and I have 3 children. They come to the farm and help me take care of the calves and help out with chores around here. On our farm, we have 1,250 cows that we milk 3 times every day. We treat our cows like princesses. We know that the happier, the more comfortable our cows are, the healthier they're going to be, and that is going to mean a safe and quality milk. So one of the things we do for the cows is we have a nutritionist who's here checking on our cows 2 to 3 times a week, and he actually does milk samples and feed samples, and from there, he can help us decide what kinds of foods that we should be feeding the cows. The healthier the cows eat, the healthier they're going to be, the better milk they're going to give us, better quality milk they're going to give us. I know that I'm the person I am today because of growing up on a farm. I feel very blessed to have this opportunity, and I can't wait to extend this opportunity to my children.
All right, so what'd you think? You like it? Feel good? Made you say, oh, we can do this, right? Who was annoyed by the white shirts? Okay, dairy people have a fixation with white. Get over it. I've never shown this to a food audience and even had them mention it. If you've ever had to bleach whites the night before the show, you know how much fun it is. Okay. How many of you were annoyed about cattle being referred to as princesses? Come on, guys, be honest. Yeah, you're not going to refer to your cattle as princes or kings. I hope not, anyhow. And how many of you were annoyed that she talked about food instead of feed? Why'd she do that? Yeah, she knows her audience, and it related to consumers. So this is what the consumer panel of 4 men and 2 women that were suburbanite and urbanite Chicagoans said. Absolutely all-American story. We loved it. Where can we buy our milk? We love the family business aspect of it. We love the whole care of the animals and so forth. But what was most interesting to me that I would encourage you all to remember was we had the opportunity to ask them questions at the end. And we asked them, if Annie came to you and said she needed double the size of her dairy, so 1,250 cows to 2,500 cows, is that large or small, by the way? It's actually pretty large in Michigan in particular. And so if she had to double the size of her dairy to bring back another family member, what would you say? Do you think the consumers supported that decision? Raise your hand if you think that the consumers would be in support of that. And how many of you think that they were absolutely not in support of that because it would be a factory farm? Consumers actually came back and said if it meant that it supported your family business and allowed you to grow your family business, absolutely. You see, sometimes we make assumptions that when we go big, it's wrong, and that people are going to think that it's wrong, rather, when in fact, if we just actively tell the story, and if we are able to use some of those pieces of language that connect with those hot buttons that really relate on their terms. So guys, if you stand up there and you start talking about how you're branding and shooting implants and castrating, and if you start talking about bottom line, you're not going to connect with people's emotions. But if you can identify these hot buttons and you can figure out what really excites the person you're talking to and you can do it in a way like Annie did, then you can win. And sometimes that means that we actually have to change some of the language. This is some of Merck's information that they have done as far as language that works with consumers. And I want to draw to your convention to a couple of things. Number one is that we talk about steak instead of steers because nobody really knows what a steer is. Outside of the farming community, outside of the ranching community, organic as industry, I would really encourage you all to look at freedom of choice. This is about choice. It's about choice on your ranch as much as it is about choice in the grocery store. And don't we as Americans want to protect choice? And rather than talking about conventional beef, talking about traditional beef. One of the things that we have a tendency to do, particularly when we talk about antibiotics and hormones, is say, well, of course we're not going to do something like that. That's stupid. That would cost us a whole lot of money. Makes perfect sense to all of us, doesn't it? How does it resonate with consumers? They're not concerned about your bottom line, no offense. They're concerned about their bottom line, and given the amount they're paying for steak in a grocery store today, I would just consider when you look at the economics of it to not lead with that. So that brings us up to the win, and that really is being able to be proactive, and it's about changing the reference point and at least creating a question mark like what we talked about. And I'm asking you all to spend 15 minutes a day. I know you're busy people, but here's the deal. Everybody has 15 minutes a day, whether you're out there and you're having a conversation at your local spot, whether you're on Instagram, or just as by way of reference, studies have conclusively proven that people tweet extensively from the toilet. I'll let that one sink in. All right. So where can you do this? You can do it a lot of different places. You can figure out different events, too. If you want to do it on a personal level, it really can be just about grabbing one social media tool. I don't advocate only using social media, to be clear. I happen to believe that a handshake and a conversation is just as critical in this conversation around farm and food as any social media tool. But you cannot refute the numbers that there are on social media. So I would encourage you all, whether it would be sharing a photo that I happen to shoot at a farm and added some text to, because people see the big metal buildings and they wonder what's going on, and I know that's not what your world is, but my challenge to you is what is it in your world that people are questioning, and how can you share images and or videos to work around that? And then really being able to commit to a plan, doing it on a proactive basis, not waiting till the next major issue to hit, sharing some of your passion. I know that you all believe in the beef business, correct? Or you wouldn't be doing what you do. It's an awful lot of work. Share that passion with each other, please. And also to use a plan that is a little bit empowering. So those are the six steps, basically, when you take a look at the who, what, why, where, when, and how. It's about being able to prepare with a plan and being able to approach your future proactively. But at the end of the day, none of that really matters unless you are involved in this. And I always label that as the 6.5 piece because it's the most critical component. If you're not a part of leading the conversation, that means you're following the likes of Wayne Pacelli. I'm not okay with that. Are you? If you're going to complain about all the regulations that have been passed, if you're going to complain about all the questions that people have, may I suggest that you look at the opportunity to lead the conversation, because we have to have every voice in this room. So I will close with this proverb because I think it fits our situation so incredibly well. If you want 1 year of prosperity, you can grow grain, especially when corn was $8 and we had to deal with all the feed prices, right? If you want a decade of prosperity, you can grow trees, almonds, peaches, apples, depending on where you are. But if you want a lifetime of prosperity, it's about growing people. You may think you're in the beef business, but I'm here to tell you, my friends, you are absolutely in the people business day in and day out. So I thank you for everything that you are out there doing on your farms and ranches, and I hope that you will join me in this conversation because I know that your voice has to be heard in order to protect our future. May God bless you for all that you do, and I will see you over at the booth. If you want to get a book, I will be over there. Back to you.